Wow. Ryanair.
I can't wait for the U.S. to lose to a team they couldn't find on a map. You see, Ryanair?
But Paramet says, nah, hold on. Said Ryanair, let's not talk about geography. Why'd you lose my luggage in Copenhagen when my destination was Paris? That is some Ryanair activity. I love all the brands getting involved, but yo, you open yourself up to some responses, my G.
Okay, it becomes your tweets become customer service responses very quickly. So
we talking about maps? Why did my luggage end up in Pyongyang when I was going to Dallas, Fort Worth?
Honest mistake, huh?
Okay. I didn't even know you flew there, dog.
What was good? Welcome to the Cooligans Daily Live. We are back home right before the 4th of July, right before America's 250th birthday. She doesn't look a day over 23. Okay.
Damn, the Statue of Liberty today, she's wearing a wife beater. That's what she's wearing because it is hot here in New York. It is going to hit 101 degrees. I saw the feels like. It's not a number that's usually hit on, on Earth. You know what I mean? This is Mojave Desert.
It's also wild. Alexis is still calling it a wife beater. I thought we moved on.
We move on?
I'm pretty sure we
did. Wife pleaser? What are we calling it?
I think that's better. That is better.
Okay. Well, the term comes from that. They wore it in movies. It's not actually what you did.
Okay. You know, it's just, it brings up bad memories for a lot of people. So
that's a good point. All right. Whatever.
Welcome to
some
the
of those
cool
people are just people who wear wife pleasers that are too small.
Welcome to the Cooligans Daily Live. We are here, like I said, back at home. My name is Christian Polanco.
Yeah, I'm Alexis Guerrero, but the content never stops, baby.
Exactly. Every day, noon Eastern, every single day. We're doing live reactions to a lot of these matches. And we may
be on multiple times a day. Every day of this week. Who knows? There's so many games. There's so much action. Plus, we're still on tour. It's pretty great.
Just keep Yahoo Sports Network on, okay? Because we're going to show
up at this
point.
If you haven't hit the bell, I mean, it's like negligent is what it really is.
It's irresponsible. All right, let's start today looking ahead to U.S. against Belgium. Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Everybody's looking forward to it. But obviously, let's start thinking about what this game can actually look like. And we can start with our expected 11s, which Alexis and I think are on the same page here. And
yeah, there's going to be one player missing from our 11s because they received a red card that I believe should be illegal in the contiguous 48. I don't care what happens in Alaska and Hawaii. This player, unfortunately, Falaron Balogun, you will not see him. And I think Christian and I came up with the same decision, which was just simply replace Ricardo Pepi, put Ricardo Pepi in place of Falaron Balogun. But there are other options. There's options to use Pulisic as sort of a lone striker that slides back into a false nine, add an additional winger. I think for me, the reason why I decided not to do that was I wasn't all of that confident after Tim Weah's last run out against Turkey. And I'm thinking he may have a better option. He may stand a better chance to be effective with this team if he comes in as a sub, as opposed to bring him in as a starter.
Yeah, I've been seeing some interesting lineup kind of theories. One of them that I thought was kind of wild was put McKennie at the nine and put Gio Reyna as the right attacking midfielder, if you watch Juventus this season, this has happened a couple of times. McKennie has started
at the nine
as a striker, and very much, I don't even want to say false nine, false eight, I guess, if that's a thing.
I mean, you know the way Harry Kane goes all the way and talks to the center backs when he checks for the ball? Right. Weston McKennie does that, but he also doesn't bomb all the way back forward. It's a great way to pull defenders out of position. My only complaint with that is, has everyone else trained on what that's going to feel like? Like, I know Weston's comfortable with that. But what's Tyler Adams going to feel like when he can feel Weston McKennie's hot breath? And he's like, wait a minute, ain't you supposed to be up there? And also, like, what's going to happen when Christian Pulisic cuts in and there's, you know, maybe someone, even if it's for a split second, wasn't sure that it was their responsibility to make that run in that moment that they typically don't make because Flair and Balakin is standing there. You know, obviously don't want to crowd him. For me, it's too big of a risk to do during a World Cup when maybe that hasn't been trained. That said, the idea of getting Gio Reyna onto the pitch is something that I think a lot of people are trying to forcibly make happen. I've seen people suggest that Gio Reyna starts at the nine or starts at, next to Pepe, and he can slide back and sort of provide the additional creativity in the midfield and that overlap. I'm comfortable with all that. I think in particular, I think maybe, you know, you could try some things against a Turquía. You can try some things against maybe, you know, a Bosnia-Herzegovina that are not traditionally what you've been doing or what you've been training for. Belgium is a step two above where I think everyone needs to be on the same page for all 90 minutes, even a split second of questioning what happens next, I think can be the end of your World Cup.
Yeah, this is a, replacing Balogun is effectively impossible. And whoever does just has to, it's just so evident, like, what we will be missing out on. Even in the red card that he was issued, like, just that style of play, just the aggression, just the making defenders, that it was good on the defender to do everything possible to not let Balogun get the ball, right? And bumping him and causing all this kind of commotion before he could even receive the ball. But this is how sort of nervous they are about Balogun getting receiving the possession in the final third. And we just don't have anybody that kind of makes defenders, puts defenders in that kind of position. So
look, I will say, not a similar player, but Ricardo Pepi does things that Florian Balogun doesn't really do, which is, you know, he's incredible. They're both incredible with spacing, but I think Pepi makes certain runs. He plays off the shoulder a little bit more. He can make certain runs behind the line. And also, he's much more ready to be a link-up guy than Flair and Balogun, who's constantly putting pressure on the back line, which I appreciate. And I think Flair Balogun has proven he's number one. But Pepe does bring something a little different. And what I like about it is maybe there's a chance that, you know, Belgian center backs haven't had the chance to prepare for that just yet, where there's a lot of game tape on how they play with Flair and Balogun. So for me, maybe there's a, you know, that half an hour against Bosnia-Herzegovina doesn't provide a lot of information on how exactly they plan to play with Pepe. And also, we've talked about this before, Pepe and Pulisic have a really good understanding. So maybe that comes into play here. And I think Pulisic, right, there were large swaths of the game against Bosnia-Herzegovina where Pulisic wasn't very effective or even able to get on the ball to be effective. And I think maybe there's an opportunity now where we see a lot more Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody in the chat, if you have any, I would love to hear any crazy theories or ideas on, if it's not Pepe and it's not Haji Wright, who would you put in there, and how would you sort of line this team up? Because it also, even the fact that we're having this conversation is interesting, right? Because it's like, there's Pochettino clearly brought extra strikers in case he needed them, and we're like, you know what, let's put a defensive midfielder in there. So that would be the best. I would imagine they would feel quite insulted if that's the case. But I'm curious, because I've seen so many different lineups, to resolve this Balogun situation. And I'm curious what other people think. But Belgium, they tied against Iran. They tied against Egypt. The game against Senegal, they're basically almost out of the World Cup. Like, this is not the team that the U.S. played in the friendlies. This is not the team that they've been in the past. I mean, this is a real, even without Balogun, this is a beatable team. They have not been that sharp at the World Cup. But as far as players that we think need to step up for the U.S. to you know, do well against Belgium. I mean, for me, I'm going to go back to the player I said last time before the game against Bosnia-Herzegovina, because I still wasn't very happy with his performance, but Christian Pulisic, I think he took one shot, no shots on target. just not, that can't be it. Like, we can't, that can't be the move. Even, you know, yes, Balogun does have a good game, and Tillman scores kind of the nail in the coffin, but Pulisic really, really needs to kind of make his presence felt in the game. And I don't care what scenario sort of calls for, you know, I don't think the best scenario is Pulisic not taking many shots. I mean, he should get a couple. The goalkeeper should be worried that he is going to take a shot. You can't be I wouldn't say that he was like completely dominated and the defenders had no idea, you know, that locked them down. It wasn't even that necessarily either. There were a couple moments he could have taken a shot and he passed. So that's kind of my expectation for the game against Belgium. Like, just, dude, step up. I don't really think there's anything to lose at this point. Just kind of make your presence felt.
Yeah, I mean, I could, you know, saying Christian Pulisic needs to step up. You know, all these names, we could say any of the 11, and I think it would be right. But in particular, when you are missing a player that is shining right now, and I think the whole world's looking at Falerne Balogun and going, how did we not know about this guy beforehand? Or if you're England, how did we miss out on this talent? Although I'm thinking if you're Falerne Balogun, you made the right choice, because look how much you're shining in this World Cup, and you would not have played. Harry Kane would have been the striker, so you would have missed yet another cycle. So I'm glad that you did choose the U.S. But for me, I think it's Falerne Balogun's replacement, right? Because I expect Christian Pulisic to step up, and I expect Christian Pulisic to do all those things that you asked for. For me, it's Ricardo Pepi. I think what I saw in the game against Turkey was fine at best. We're talking about 90 minutes with one shot on target, one chance created, which is great. But I was expecting to see a little more. I was expecting to see the Pepi that didn't get the opportunity last World Cup and that was going to sort of, you know, grab the bull by its horn, for the lack of a better term. I want to see something more. I want to see someone reach to that same level, that the way Falerne Balogun took the opportunity to seize this moment. This is a chance for Ricardo Pepi to show that the U.S. have two wildly capable strikers, and use this moment, use this opportunity. This is going to be a round of 16 victory. And if you score one or two goals or even the winner, this is going to be a moment that you're going to remember forever. Don't look at it the way you did the Turkey game. Take this moment. You got on the squad for a reason, so I'm hoping he uses that.
Fair. Yeah, this is a huge opportunity to put your kind of like name on the kind of the world stage. You know, Ricardo Pepi especially had the failed transfer to Fulham and mm-hmm. a lot of confusion there. And I mean, if he has a good match against Belgium, I think this could change his career, could definitely change his life. So yeah, we're obviously all rooting for him, but man, yeah, it's going to be a big challenge. So when it comes to Belgium, players to look out for, who do you got?
Jeremy Doku. And when I say players to look out for, I'm talking in particular to Alex Freeman. Okay. Look out for this guy, because he's going to be running at you. He's a extremely creative winger. What I love about him is he usually is at the right place at the right time. And if he's not, he has the ball at his feet, he tends to find himself at the right place at the right time, because he could get past almost anyone. The guy's a dribbling machine. He's absolutely creative. And I think he can unlock, you know, the offensive attack with crosses, with getting in the box, creating that pressure, diagonal balls. We haven't seen a lot of it in a Belgium shirt this World Cup, but we've seen it week after week at Manchester City. And what I hate about Belgium is they're very hard to finalize. You know, everyone's talking about how they haven't played well. They haven't gone away. They're still here. They're one of those teams that will just find some magic at the end of the game and stay in the competition. And if you give him an inch, he's going to take a yard. And this is one of those players where I feel like defensively, we need to be looking out for him more than almost anybody else. You know, a lot of the midfield are older. Jeremy Doku, fresh legs, you know, can absolutely kill you with one step over, completely go past your entire defense. I'm really hoping that this guy has a bad game.
Yeah, we saw him against in the friendly, and that was not fun at all. It was really It was really brutal. So I think this time around, I guess with that experience, that's helpful. But this is going to be a lot of work for Alex Freeman, for Serginho Dest, for Weston McKennie. They all have to communicate well. It's like the who
got Tyler Adams.
Tyler Adams as well. But I mean, look, Doku is usually on that left side. These are the guys he's really going to be going at 1v1 because they know how well it worked the first time when they played each other in the friendly. So for me, I'm going to go with Yuri Tielemans, the midfielder, because he has been... even though Belgium has been struggling a little bit, he's been a bit of a problem for the teams that Belgium has played against. Yuri is he's at Aston Villa, and he's someone who he
How
can
old
cook
is this guy now.
He's not that old, I think, but he can cook you in several different ways. He's a fantastic passer. He can make key passes. He scored the winning penalty against Senegal, which was. You know, I don't know if it should have been a penalty, but whatever. But he scored two goals in that game, and he's such a threat from outside the box. We've seen several goals in the Premier League. He can bang them in from really, really far out. And this is going to be the concern I have for Matt Freese at this. And Tyler Adams as well, is like, limit how many shots this guy takes, because not only. Maybe you could stop the first shot, but maybe you won't get the rebound because maybe Doku is there. Stuff like that. That's what I'm kind of worried about. But this is going to be a game where I think the U.S. has to try to prioritize possession. I think the possession should be kind of even for these teams. But that's where I think the U.S. could have a little bit of an advantage, because just like don't let players like Yuri Tielemans have the ball that much. So I know it's easier said than done, but that's kind of what I'm kind of looking for the U.S. to have a really good chance to win this game, because it's not going to be easy at all. Yeah.
No, if we're going to continue to sort of overload the midfield, hopefully what we're doing is blocking any opportunity in all his channels to make passes. But yeah, Yuri Tielemans is, by the way, 29 years old, incredibly, incredibly gifted, younger than I thought, someone who is older than I thought in Romelu Lukaku is going to be someone that we're going to have to also monitor. And actually, I think this is like the perfect, this is the perfect striker for a Tim Ream to just shadow this guy. Lukaku's not the fastest guy in the world. He's not the wiliest guy in the world. What he is, he's really smart and knows how to get even a slight inch to get a shot off. He understands where to be. He understands also how to be physical with a defender. I think this is a great opportunity for Tim Ream to go sort of man for man here and just cover this guy to death.
Okay. I mean, I think the physicality is going to be a bit of a concern. I think... The Chris Richards has to get involved here. Maybe the younger guy.
Oh, buddy, buddy, I don't care if I don't care if 11 guys get involved. Trust me.
But look, Lukaku hasn't started any of these games for Belgium, and I don't think he will this time around. Did we show the stat the other day about Lukaku?
Yes, we did.
Oh, we did. Okay, so I don't know if we want to pull it up again, but like Lukaku as a starter and Lukaku as a sub. Oh yeah, of course, he did start. All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're looking at it, and 73 minutes, no shots, no goals, but then in 104 minutes off the bench, four shots and two goals, and he's
dangerous.
He don't
like the heat. Okay, he don't like the heat, and he don't want to be running this whole game. So I hope he does start.
So yeah, so this is I'd be surprised if he started, but also the thing is that Ketelari, right? Ketelari, Charles de Ketelari, he hasn't been that good either. So I don't think there's like some huge concern over who starts regardless, because Belgium as a whole have not really been performing that well, not getting goals from not getting too many goals from their strikers, obviously, if they're not a substitute in Lukaku. So
is also like not really a striker. He's more of an attacking mid. So Lukaku is a, like in and out striker. This is like a nine.
Yeah.
He's not worried about anything else. So I hope he starts, and I feel like we have a better chance of winning if he starts, which is crazy because it's Romelu Lukaku. But when he comes off that bench, man, he provides a spark.
But this is the time for revenge, especially against a player like Romelu Lukaku, who was on the 2014 team. When so the players on the team was Lukaku, Thibaut Courtois, and Kevin De Bruyne. Is anybody else?
I think it was just those three.
So these familiar faces, and you know, in some way, there should be some sense of like, what, you're still alive, old man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like some of these young guys,
you ain't
like,
too old for this.
you killed my daddy, and I'm here for revenge. You know,
I'm here to avenge my father's death. You know, those old movies, bro.
My dad, Chris Wondolowski. Okay,
damn, with the extra W on his shirt by mistake, Doug. So, for me, I think this game is going to be a long, hard fought one, but I can see the U.S. winning 2-1.
I'm gonna go with that same scoreline as well. This is gonna be a really tough game where I think even psychologically the U.S. has to like understand and believe like this is not the same Belgium that they just played. This is we are as good as these other teams in the world. And again, I think for the future of like American soccer and then also for the narrative that we're sort of used to hearing, like I've also been seeing a bunch of content creators in the UK being like, yo, these, you know, the I believe that we will win, they're like, yo, this is like kind of it's catching on a little bit, and it's catching on because they're winning, you know. And
yeah, I've seen well. We slag them off, but they look at the vibes. I've seen all those. Keep glazing, bro. Y'all are hating and now you're glazing. But you know what? It's only going to get bigger and it's only going to get better if the U.S. can win this match. And I think, you know, similar to, I believe it was Taylor Twellman who said it. I think from this point on, if you win against Belgium, I think it makes a big statement about where the, you know, where the federation is, where the project is for the men's side of the U.S. Of U.S. soccer. I think it shows an intent to continue to grow. And I think from that point on, you're kind of playing with house money. And I'm not saying that that's where the World Cup ends for us. But from this point on, pressure's off. You know what I mean? Yeah. We proved we can do what we came to do.
And I love seeing the comments post-game from like from Tim Ream, Christian Pulisic, all the players on the national team, basically saying like Flo, we got your back. Like we and Tim Ream specifically said like we have to play so that Balogun can get another game. And that I think that's a great mission, and I think that's a great motivation. Because look, he's the leading goal scorer for the U.S. men's national team at this World Cup. We clearly see what he has to offer, and that's it. I mean, to me, as far as best players on the team, it's a debate. You know, you could count the goal scorer, Tyler Adams, and Weston McKennie. Those three to me are like the foundation of this team. So
there's been a couple stars, but Flair and Balogun, I think, has shocked the world. And I want to make a quick point. I know we're going to go to comments in a second. I've seen a couple of creators, especially Black European creators, make this post talking about Flair and Balogun put up a picture of himself with no caption. And underneath it is just free my boy. I put one in there. Free Balo, free Balogun. He said, he's like, look at these American fans. He's like, bro, there's not one racist comment. There's not one, you know, disrespectful comment. He's like, that would never happen to a Black player in this country or that country. He's like, look at the way Americans are just sort of backing this guy. And I think it's revealing a lot about, you know, U.S. soccer fans and how welcoming they tend to be, but also just how much this guy has sort of captivated the sort of dreams and the fantasies that all these American soccer fans have. Flair Balogun could bring us something significant in international competition in a way that I don't think we've expected before.
And I think it highlights another point about why players choose to represent the United States over the other countries that they could represent, is that there's a certain level of appreciation. Yeah, maybe you're not playing, maybe you're not the top four team that's going to win the World Cup or whatever, or you're not ranked super, super high. But there is a, and I'm not saying that U.S. soccer fans are all perfect either, but there is a gratitude and appreciation for the players that do play for the crest and represent the game well. So I think that's a cool aspect as well. All right, let's take a look at a few comments. Shout out to everybody watching on YouTube.
Hey, Tim Lanning USA. I feel the vibes.
Okay,
my optimistic prediction: Poch gonna roll out some crazy formations, and the expert is gonna be like, what is he doing? And then the U.S. men's national team will decimate Belgium and everyone will talk about how he's a genius. Okay, that's... Jay Riddle is thinking, yo, he's playing chess and checkers. He's got one of those things where you remember the board you opened up and it was all different types of stuff. Okay, Ingrid okay. says, vamos, Colombia. That's not what we're talking about.
We're not
right
even
now,
talking
bro.
About Colombia. We're getting Colombia in this. Kyle yeah. Richie said, I think fans are way more worried about it than Poch and the players are. Okay. You know, that I mean, maybe that, and that's a good situation to be in. Kent, Daniel,
shouts to Kent.
A bunch of USA emojis. Let's go. All right.
This will be a Pulisic coming out party. Okay.
Okay, well, we're
there was a
of
little
him.
Bit of hesitation for both Christian and I there to make the obvious joke. Pepe was bodied off the ball so many times versus Turkey. He's a slender guy. It also doesn't help that he wears the shirt my size. It makes him look even smaller. Pepe needs to use that arm cast like a weapon and start hitting defense.
Bro, like Mega Man, dog.
Boom, boom. I think, what was it? Wasn't there like a wrestler who wore a cast or something and kept knocking people out?
I don't know. Pepe is a fearless player and taking the World Cup opportunity, and I love it. Let's go.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot to be... look, it's an unfortunate situation, and even the comments about this red card have gone global. Everybody's like, it's not a red card. It is a red card. And the fact that this is about an American player... I'm even hearing conspiracy theories that it's FIFA that made... sure that the ref gave the red card and sabotaged the United. I love it, bro. We in the news. They talking about
bro,
us.
The fact that the U.S. is involved in a you know a conspiracy theory, and it ain't about us doing a bad. It's pretty okay. good.
That's okay,
some progress.
There's no Epstein list. There's nothing.
There's no oil involved.
It's just a good old footy debate.
Good. Okay. Put in your wildest conspiracy theories about the Flair and Baligan red card in the comments. I want to read them. We're going to take a break. But when we get back, maybe we'll read some of those comments. Stick around. There's a lot more Cooligans left.
Fabrizio
Romano.
Oh,
my God. You're looking at this for the first time. I'm seeing this. This is breaking news. Fabrizio Romano, maybe here we go in Jurgen Klopp. To the DFB, to Die Mannschaft. Oh, my yeah. God.
Jurgen Klopp is the new coach for Germany. I mean, would be interesting. I don't think he says no to it. I can't really think of a reason. I mean, he has a cushy gig at Red Bull.
Yeah, but wasn't there
games.
a couple leaks a little while back saying that he wasn't really all that excited about that opportunity anymore, and he was sort of trying to find a way out of it? I think being the coach of the U.S. men's national, I'm sorry, of the German national team is a way out of it. I think think you're doing all right.
That's a good pivot. Look, does he fix the problems for Germany? I honestly thought going into the World Cup, I thought Germany was in like, they looked pretty sharp. I mean, I don't know of like, I don't know how you feel about that. Kai Havertz is like, I sort of liked him as a midfielder at Chelsea versus a striker at Arsenal, but he is getting like important goals, and he did look pretty sharp for Germany at this World Cup. I don't know, the one issue I could find for Germany is the moment during penalties. I don't know if you saw the video of
where the players didn't
Joshua,
want to step up.
Yeah, of Joshua Kimmich asking who wants to take the sixth penalty. Fifth or sixth penalty, and you see the player saying no, and then finally Jonathan
that's
Todd
crazy
takes it. And it's just like, okay, where, why are they in that situation? Like, what, you, not to say that every single player needs to be super confident, but for so many to be like no, and it's like also like midfielders and it's not, it wasn't all like strikers or the goalkeeper simply saying that.
Yeah. And look, you know, I've never been in that position, right? I didn't play in the World Cup, and I don't know what that pressure, that mounting pressure feels like. And I'm sure you don't want to be the reason that you know, that the nation is bumped out of the World Cup. But I'm surprised that they're even asking. If you're the captain, yeah. I would imagine Roy Keane would come up to you and go, you're now taking a penalty. What are you going to do? You're not going to say no. You know, you're going to get two-footed by your own teammate. So for me, I'm surprised they're even asking. I think the positives that come from Julian Nagelsmann is that he's a fun, progressive coach who you know, familiarizes himself with the players and can speak to them on a level where he's not much older and, you know, he can sort of speak to them in their own language. The negative is he's not exactly a father figure or an authority figure. And I think sometimes, and you see it with a Didier Deschamps isn't the most tactical genius in the world. In fact, when he played, he was called a water carrier, which at the time was being said disrespectfully, and he turned it into sort of his identity. What you're looking at here is someone who, in Jurgen Klopp, is both maybe in a way the tactics that he liked to use are a little bit dated now, being so many years away from teams understanding how to deal with gegenpressing versus when he first came on the scene, that we remember him at Dortmund and then obviously going to Liverpool and having a lot of success. Maybe. And it's possible that maybe he's changed a few things. We don't know that, right? Because he's not coaching. But the one thing I can say without a doubt, that is an absolute fact, is that that man, when he walks in a room, you're paying attention. When that man tells you to do XYZ, you are going to do XYZ. And that for some reason, there is something about this man that you want to both do what he says, run through a brick wall from him, but you also want him to hug you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's just one of those guys. He gives off the aura of a national team coach in a way that Carlo Ancelotti does, in a way that like Didier Deschamps, as I mentioned before, does. Yeah. He just has that. He's a Zinedine Zidane-like aura, in the sense that you kind of want to be around him and appease him and please him. So, and that sounds wild sus, but you get what I'm saying. You want to, you don't understand what I mean? So for me, I think, can you think of a better coach, especially for the German national team? No,
not at all. I mean, this would be a good get for the federation. Like you were saying, I mean, he's just a well-respected coach. I mean, you see all the videos when he left Liverpool and how all the players spoke about him. And, you know, and then, you know, they end up winning the Premier League, the league after the year after he leaves. But it was Arne Slot, but like, realistically, that's Jurgen Klopp's team. And
yeah, I don't side with that take, but I get where you're coming from.
I'm not saying to give him credit for it, but clearly he has his imprint on the team is clearly there.
He had fingerprints. I still think it was an upgrade over what he did, but yeah, he did have fingerprints.
Sure. So, but interesting news. I mean, it's just another disappointing national team. It's just like, again, they win the World Cup in 2014, and for them to be in this situation of three World Cup cycles in a row is just so odd. I mean, not get out of the group, what I believe in 2018 and 2022, and then get knocked out in the round of 32. You know, especially when it's like more teams, you would think you have a better opportunity. And like, penalties are penalties, but man, just a disappointing 12 years for Germany. So, all right, let's move on real quick. Let's talk about Spain against Austria. They beat them 3-0 yesterday.
Was Austria there?
Austria. I mean, look at the stats. I believe no shots on target, which is kind of crazy.
You score? You shoot on target. Look, I'm a big... Damn.
10 shots to nothing. It's just insane. Yeah.
That's not great. But what I will say is I'm a big fan of Austria. For some reason, I've just connected to the style of play and sort of the project they have going. But, when you have, and they have some great players for sure, but, you know, Spain is just one of those teams that's like they're leaps and bounds above their competition on most parts. We talked a little bit about how France hasn't really even gotten out of first gear and they've been bum rushing these teams. I think Spain is another one of those. And to me, there's a bit of a collision course with these two nations. So Austria, I think they didn't even, I was watching the game and I'm like frustrated at the fact that like, dude, you're not even getting an opportunity. You're not even getting like, there's not even like chances being created. There's not even like effective passes into the box. If Austria was going to win, it was because they were going to get maybe like a dead ball, you know, type of goal, something from a set piece. The one thing I will give them credit for is their ability to press. They did not say we're going to bunker down. They still tried to press. They left themselves open and said, let's risk it. So it was fun to watch. But Jesus, look at Spain in this World Cup. Four matches, four clean sheets. They've given up three shots on target in four games.
And it's wild because they also have a fantastic keeper, and he barely has to do any work.
That dude is cutting his nails.
Because everybody's always like, oh, how can, you know, David Raya not get an opportunity winning the Premier League and all that stuff? And it's like, it don't even really matter. Like, Spain are just...
look at this stat. This is another reason to hire Klopp.
Yes, Spain didn't allow a shot on target versus Austria. The first time a team haven't allowed one in a FIFA World Cup knockout stage match since Germany in the 2014 final, 0 against Argentina. I mean, this Bam. Is a... I think the result in the first game against Cabo Verde, that is that's still sort of all in our minds, and we're thinking like, oh, Spain, they ain't really gonna do anything this tournament. But man, they the consistency, the sharpness is fantastic. And I mean, there's just certain players that Cucurella, I think, he was fantastic in this game, defending, moving the ball forward. He got a goal that was disallowed. There's just even like, I don't, again, I've said it before, I don't love Oyarzabal as a striker. I like him more as a winger. But he even, you know, he got the two goals.
Of a crazy take.
I think he's a better winger. He doesn't really play striker at his club that often, right? That's kind of like, you know, I don't, when I think of La Liga and top attackers, Oyarzabal's not like the top name. That's, I don't know if even it's in the top like five, but for Spain, he's like, he's doing the job that he's been asked to do. And so you got to give him credit where credit is due. So this Spain team, at this point, now you have to just be realistic and be like, okay, they're kind of back to being at least top four to win the World Cup. I mean, the performances from Argentina and France have kind of stolen a lot of the narrative, and maybe that's been good on Spain to take away a little bit of the pressure from them. But yeah, without a doubt, Spain has to be back on top of that list of like at least top two or three favorites to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Spain, if you counted them out, that was because of the first game. And I even said, hey, you know, Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia, and look how they did after that in the last World Cup. So you can't always count a first game. Oyarzabal plays for Pellegrino Matarazzo over at Real Sociedad. And if you look at his heat map, you know, he's, what I like about him is he can play almost as a midfielder and he can play almost as a winger. Very effective in front of goal, which is why you have him. And, you know, Spain traditionally haven't had the greatest of strikers recently. You know, they've really been wanting. So for me, I think Oyarzabal provides a lot like what Kai Havertz provides, which is he doesn't look lost in the midfield the way like a Lukaku might. He can play as a, you know, Kai Havertz is more of that room deuter that's sort of roaming around. Oyarzabal's clinical in front of goal.
Yeah, I mean, we also love. I was gonna say that we expected like Lamine Yamal to kind of dominate this World Cup, and he hasn't really, but he's still been doing all right. But I love. Did you see
driving at defenders though is what he does. He completely disrupts the defenders' opportunity.
I could have easily had a goal yesterday as well that the keeper stopped. But did you see the moment with his Lamine Yamal's younger brother in the crowd and doing like, if we could get somebody producer, if you can get the image of his younger brother in the crowd, like just going like rah, like this kid is like four and he's like literally locked into the game. I think it was after a goal or some moment, but it's like, it's adorable and just like awesome. And you know, he was being asked about his little brother. He's like, I love my little brother, and he's like a son to me, and all this other stuff. But it was just an awesome moment to have at this World Cup. So maybe we'll show it before we end the segment. But let's move on to Portugal against. Do we have it? Okay, this is it right here. Yeah, look at this little kid.
Oh, that's a cute kid.
He is losing his mind. It's so awesome to have this. All right,
let's talk about Portugal versus Croatia, because if you're Croatian, you probably don't want us to talk about this. You know what I mean?
Brutal.
This was a tough one.
Yeah, I'm on the plane. We were both flying at the same time. Were you watching the game? Could you watch the game? I couldn't watch the game.
Yeah, my internet kept going in and out, but I did see. I saw the Gonzalo Ramos goal. I saw the Leao assist, and I also saw the goal at like 115th minute or something crazy.
Right, right.
Where Croatia scores, but it's ruled offside.
My plane landed. my plane landed right at around the 95th minute. So I saw the rest of that. And then I ended up watching the game back. But this was so there's a couple storylines here, right? Because Ronaldo does get his first ever knockout round goal at a World Cup, right? So he's happy with that. And you know, he has a goal disallowed, but then gets the goal. We're looking at the Yahoo Sports tweet. It says that Portugal and Cristiano Ronaldo aren't done yet. They overcome a 1-0 deficit with a CR7 goal and a stoppage time game winner by Gonzalo Ramos to advance to the round of 16. So the main moment here is Ronaldo getting some decent opportunities. Wasn't super involved in the game and with a ton of touches or anything like that. But this is interesting that because the substitutions, we were talking about Ronaldo getting subbed off, and would Roberto Martinez have the courage to do it? And he did. He subbed him off in the 80th minute when it's 1-1. But there was the subs that were really interesting were all four that happened in the 62nd minute. He subs out.
He took out Vitinha and Bruno Fernandes at the same time,
and Pedro Neto, and brings in Gonzalo Ramos, who's that for, and Ronaldo, right? Who are the four? What four? Oh, João Cancelo also got subbed off. So this is a big change. Very drastic approach to to, you know, usually sub one or two guys or whatever, but four when it's 1-1, I think was very bold of Roberto Martinez. I think so. The comments,
I don't think it was that bold. I think it's, for me, it was just like, yo, if I get knocked down, I'm probably gonna get fired anyway, so might as well make the changes I've been afraid to make previous. Well, I don't understand getting rid of Vitinha. I could understand Bruno Fernandes. So Vitinha keeps possession so well, but Bernardo Silva was a genius. Genius move, because he's so direct.
So the commentary around it was basically removing Vitinha and Fernandes. Like, they basically the pace of play that they play with is just kind of slow. So that is so replacing them is it just sort of helped the game and move the ball a little bit faster. At the very least, look, I want to give credit, and easily the man of the match for me was Rafael Leão. And Rafael hadn't started too many of the games. I don't think he started any of the games at the World Cup, which baffles me. I don't know why he's not the lockdown starter. He was fantastic. Just
because it's hard to have two players on the pitch that don't track back. You can't have two. It's true. Like, as much as I think Rafael is electric, and I'm shocked he's not found himself at a Champions League contending club just yet. But to me, he just refuses to track back. He likes to keep himself open. If you're going to play with Cristiano Ronaldo, you can't have two guys doing that. And for me, I think Bruno Fernandes and Vitinha, most of their passes, if you look at their pass map, all their passes are really safe. They're shuttling set aside or they're passing backwards, which is fine. You want to create a little bit more action. You bring in someone like a Bernardo Silva and you whisper in his ear, "Hey, pass forward. Let's move it quick. Let's pace." And that's what starts to get Rafael out of the ball. But to me, Vitinha also provides you with all of the possessions. So removing him, I can understand why you would do it for change of pace, but there's a lot of people suggesting that Vitinha and Bruno Fernandes don't deserve to start. You're an idiot if you think that. You know what I mean? Okay. It was simply a change of pace.
So look, to all the Ronaldo stands, maybe we were wrong or whatever.
No, like, people, he scored a penalty at 25 touches in the game, and it wasn't even his penalty. He drew the penalty.
No. I did like the other goal that was disallowed for offside. I thought that was, he was just offside by like his arm or shoulder. But it was great control and chipping over the keeper. Look,
he's still one of the greatest players of all time. I just truly believe you'd be better with Gonzalo Ramos and Rafael.
That's the thing. And
I think that's been proven even more. I think that cross goes to Ronaldo. He doesn't find it.
I agree.
That cross goes to Gonzalo Ramos. And look at how incisive he was. So
for him to get to the ball in between the two defenders, just
in
well
three
done.
Defenders. I mean, three.
That's three
defenders. it was insane.
It's an easy, it can seem like a bad a bad pass. That's how, like, that was to Ronaldo, it would be like, oh, that's not really good service. You see how many defenders, and Gonzalo Ramos made it into something. But yeah, look, we could talk about Portugal.
Can I just say, but I know we want to move on, but the goal that's called offside for Croatia, I get that there's a chip in the ball that tells you when it's been touched, but in what world is a defender with his back to the goal jumping for the ball in a cross, not looking to make an action on the ball? And I understand that he's kind of ducking out of the way, but he's in the action of defending. If for some reason that ball is touched, and I get that it's glanced off of that player's head, but after that, it touches a defender. That a dude in it, he wasn't walking to the sideline. He wasn't ducking out of the way completely. He was in the air. If that man touches the ball, there's no reason why the Croatian player is offside. I mean,
they would argue like a clear action on the ball, meaning like he possessed it and then passed, and then his touch led to it going to the opposing player. And clearly that isn't the case. He was just trying to clear it, and it did touch him. But as much as I watch it back, I'm like, it didn't look like it touched him, but we see the little thing there, and the little seismograph tells us that it touched it.
It's called the SNCO technology. You know what I mean?
Okay. We'll yell more about it in the next segment. So come right back.
We got comments though, right? We got some people hanging out.
Yeah. Oh, we got comments. European
clubs complained that Americans were starting to believe in themselves. FIFA responded immediately. # Balogun red card theory. I like this. European clubs, like, we can't have Americans be owning the clubs and be confident on the pitch. Rumor has it that Balogun asked the referee, "What's in your wallet?" The referee then showed Balo the red card. It wasn't even a red card. This was a Capital One commercial.
Yeah, it was a Capital One sponsorship. Why is he asking that? He will be a Liverpool legend and we'll love him forever, meaning Jurgen Klopp.
Okay, Klopp. Bar okay, VAR stands for Vibes Altering Referee Justice for Croatia. I like the acronym, bro.
Yeah, but dude. Brutal. Right, here we go. Brutal. All right, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Cooligans Daily Live right after this.
Welcome back to the Cooligans Daily Live. The action doesn't stop. I know we don't have a ton of time, but there's a lot of games that are coming. Why don't we take a quick look at some of these? Colombia versus Ghana. What are you thinking, Christian?
This is going to be Ghana defending quite a bit. Colombia are really going to focus on James and Luis Diaz and doing their thing. This is going to be, it's interesting. So Ghana has never beaten a South American side in the World Cup. So it would be a historic, win if they did. But I think the issue with Ghana, especially, they're defending well. They got the draw against England, but realistically, they are not scoring enough and they're not really creating many chances. Antoine Semenyo has not even had a shot on target, which is kind of crazy. So Ghana going to have a really difficult time scoring. Not to say that Colombia have been dominant going forward, but yeah, Colombia is just the better side here, and they should get this win, and definitely in the 90 minutes.
Yeah, to me, I think Colombia is going to Ghana. You know what I mean? They're going to win this one. just a Spanish accent.
Exactly.
I think Colombia is just a little bit too strong. I'm expecting this to be 3-1 to Colombia. I think Colombia has a little bit of magic. I don't know how long it lasts, but I think they got this next one. Okay, Canada versus Morocco. Canada, grand opening, grand closing for Canada. Morocco is just too strong.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what they did, what Morocco did to the Netherlands. They're a really, really strong side and are playing really, really well. This would be just a historic win if Canada could get even if it went to like extra time. I mean, Canada really, really has to show up, and I just don't know how they can. There's just too much great attacking talent in Morocco. But yeah, we'll see what Jacob Schaffelberg could do.
Estakio is going to be, to me, the player to watch in this. I think Estakio needs to find a way to keep possession and shuttle the ball to your attackers, whether it's, you know, Jonathan David, Oluwase, whoever you're passing to. It's Estakio is going to have to find a way to pull strings in the limited possession that they're going to have. But I'm thinking Canada is probably going to win, probably going to lose this one. I'm thinking 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe they might lose 2-0. I don't think Canada scores in this, but a part of me hopes I'm wrong. It would be awesome to see all the hosts continue to move on into the round of 16. Into the quarterfinal. But we shall see what Canada can do.
You know who Canada might see on the airport on the way home is Paraguay, because they are going to play France. and I think that is easily the end of Paraguay's run here in this World Cup. If not, this would be the greatest upset in the world, because look at these players. Yeah. Mbappe, Dembele, Olise, Barcola, Tchouameni. I'm not even going to mention Rabiot, Saliba, Upamecano. This is just a star-studded. The vibes are high at this camp. The players have barely... I mean, you got your coach bowing to Mbappe as he comes off the pitch. They've barely gotten out of first gear. They're not even running yet. This has been an absolutely great run so far, and I don't think it ends here. I think this could be France 4-0.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, surprising that Paraguay has improved as far as defensively since that game against the U.S. But I just don't see them scoring. I was talking up Julio Enciso before the tournament. I thought he wasn't even going to play because he was dealing with an injury, but he's been fantastic. But I can't see where the offense is going to come from against this France. So, France will move on, most likely. Let's move on to Brazil versus Norway, which is the game we're going to be at on Sunday. We're finally going to a World Cup game. I cannot wait. This is going to be in New York, New Jersey Stadium. This is going to be a good one, because Brazil could get shocked here, but I still have to favor Brazil.
This will be a home game for them.
For most positions on the pitch, like position for position, Brazil, I will more likely pick a Brazilian player, but the Haaland factor, and he is obviously, if they can't focus on him or if they don't pay attention to him, even for a moment, like Ivory Coast did, he's gonna kill you. So, but
yeah, given and that, I dare you to double him, because you got Sorloth and Nusa there, who have shown you that they're absolutely capable of having a great game and putting one on target. And of course, Martin Odegaard, who looks revitalized. You know, when you allow him to touch the ball many times throughout a match, when you allow him the entire offense to run through him, it's magical. And I think this is an upset for Brazil. Brazil's done here.
What? Brother?
Yeah, I'm calling this it. I'm calling it 3-2.
The matchup I'm looking for is Haaland against Gabriel Magalhães. This is going to be what we see in the Premier League. And this should be, you know, box office, pay-per-view fight night, whatever. This should be they clearly have a history, you know, throwing the ball at Gabriel Magalhães, all the beef that they've always had, and it could be determined at a World Cup. Insane. All right, let's move on to what do we have?
Mexico versus England. This is at the Azteca, in elevation, in extreme heat. England travels like a carton of eggs. This is not going to be easy for England going up against this team. And I know what you're thinking. Which one of these players gets into the England 11? It doesn't matter. I think Mexico wins this in 2-1. I think England has all the firepower and they're great. I just do not think they've ever dealt with this atmosphere, this elevation, or this heat.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm rooting for Mexico. But I think England is going to do it. If they can get through, I think it's going to be a tale of the second half, right? Dealing with the elevation, can they just catch their breath? And if they can hold on, the quality should be able to take them to a victory. But I could also see, if it goes to extra time, then I'm worried about England. So that's we shall see.
Listen, we don't have a lot of time, but guys, follow, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell button. Thank you so much for following along. Subscribe all over the place. We absolutely love you guys.
Shout out, everybody watching on Yahoo. See you Monday. Cheers.
That's right. Put something crazy in the comment. Maybe we'll read it in the next show.